This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. There's no doubt that long-distance races are tough. You have to contend with the terrain, the weather, and the limits of your own body. But now put the race on horseback, and you've got a significant level up in the degree of difficulty. And the skill set required to succeed has a dramatic limiting effect on the pool of potential participants. Among them is Lori Kaplan. By day, she's a registered dietitian nutritionist based in Dunlap, Illinois. But more to the point of our conversation today, she recently returned from the Gaucho Derby, an epic endurance race on horseback through the Patagonia region of Argentina. It spans 10 days, covers 500 kilometers. That's about 310 miles to you and me. Here to talk about her experience is Lori Kaplan herself. Lori, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did you start riding horses?
I was about 5 when I started.
And what got you into it? What talk about it. I mean, you're not, I presume as a 5-year-old, you're not going on long distance cross country endurance races. What was that like for you at that time?
No, I think it was typical horse girl. You know, I woke up one morning and told my mom I wanted to ride horses. And so she found a local stable and got me going. And I'm forever grateful for her for doing that for me.
How long have you, is it something you've kept up with throughout your life?
Mostly, yeah. There were some spans of time when I had my kids and stuff that I wasn't riding on a regular basis. But I worked in the business, worked and trained and traveled around, rode in Ireland. I had opportunities at multiple different barns. And yeah, so most of my life.
How did you come to be aware of the Gaucho Derby?
So I heard Eric Cooper speak on a podcast years ago about the Mongol Derby. And that is the first race that the equestrianists organized. It's been out for about a decade. And that's in Mongolia, 10 days or longer, and 1,000 kilometers. So I got on their website and saw that they had a Gaucho Derby offering in Patagonia, and I've always wanted to ride horses in Patagonia. So I tried to see if I qualified for that.
I understand there was also a book that might have been motivating you a little bit.
Very much so. Yeah, The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter I read in 2022, and it just really had a profound effect on me how we're just too comfortable, and it's contributing to poor health and poor mindset. We're not meant to sit around all the time. I'm not talking about being frantic and overloaded, because that's the other end of it, right? But it just inspired me to really push myself, try this thing called the Mizagi that he discusses.
Yeah, I have this book. I'm not saying I fully embraced it as much as you have, but I thought maybe we could read a quote just to give people a sense here. He says, "Western laziness consists of cramming our lives with compulsive activity so that there's no time at all to confront the real issues. If we look into our lives, we'll see clearly how many unimportant tasks, so-called responsibilities, accumulate to fill them up. Going on as we do, obsessively trying to improve our conditions, can become an end in itself and a pointless distraction." So talk about what made you decide, to want to actually participate in this, what sounds like a kind of insane idea of riding a horse. Yeah.
Yeah. There were many days I questioned my insanity for signing up for this. It just felt right in my soul. And I, from the very beginning, I paced myself in terms of getting ready for it, kind of, you know, doing the application and then letting go of the outcome, really not expecting to get in or to be able to find the funding for it. And yet all the pieces came together. And I just felt like I was called to do this. I'm not sure how else to describe it.
Yeah, and we'll get into the specifics of the race. We have to take a break in about a minute here. I understand you also were raising money for charity through this. Can you talk briefly about that? Yeah.
Yes. I have a GoFundMe page for a couple groups that work with our veterans, and they use horses to reduce and eliminate PTSD and provide a foundation for these men and women to be able to live healthy lives when, you know, the rest of other parts of our world are not helping them as can be. And horses can do this. Horses help us heal.
All right, we're going to take a break. We will continue talking with Lori Kaplan about the Gaucho Derby. She is a registered dietitian nutritionist in Dunlap, based in Dunlap, Illinois. And the Gaucho Derby is a 500-kilometer horseback endurance race through Patagonia. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of this break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Lori Kaplan, who by day is a dietitian nutritionist based in Dunlap, Illinois. And in her off time or other time, she is an avid horseback rider and recently returned from the Gaucho Derby, which is this epic endurance race through the Patagonia region of Argentina. 10 days, 500 kilometers, that's 310 miles, all on horseback. If you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Lori, how does this race work? Tell us the specifics there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we start with a few days of pre-race training. So we flew to Buenos Aires, and then we went to El Calafate, which is down to the almost the southern tip of South America. Then we took an 8-hour bus ride to essentially the middle of nowhere, which was Start Camp. And it was one of the private ranchers who very generously allow us to train there. And that's where the first group of horses that we use. So pre-race.
You're not bringing your own horses, flying them to South America for this.
No. And the logistics of the race is massive. So they coordinated, I think, with 5 to 7 different ranchers. And these are massive ranchers, tens of thousands of hectares large. And so we used over 600 horses, and they part of the fee that we pay goes to pay these ranchers for the use of their horses. And then so we use their horses. So we're starting here at Start Camp. We have navigation briefings, medic briefings. The medic one was significant because being in the middle of nowhere, they stressed, do not let anything get past the point of being uncomfortable, even a sliver. So we would ride into vet checks every day, a couple times a day, and there would always be a medic there in case somebody had an issue. And they were treating us for lots of different things.
No doubt. Let's talk about the horses. Long-time listeners or careful listeners will know I've developed this obsession with Ulysses S. Grant in the past year or so. He was, of course, the Civil War general, a noted horseman himself. During the Civil War, he owned and rode at least 10 different horses. So talk about that. How are you adapting to, I mean, you're meeting these horses for the first time. You're having to learn to work with them. What is that like?
Yeah. So before I got on, I would try to just do a little connection with them, you know, be present, slow my breath, which there's a lot of anxiety going on here. There's a lot of unknowns. So that was a challenge in itself. Just connect with them, kind of read what they were telling me, and showing up calm and kind. And I was lucky enough to have calm and kind horses. Is that an accident? Not exactly, but there's a lot more in there. But the first group of horses were a Percheron mix. So we had the first horse I rode, he was not big, but he was sturdy. I called him the little tank or tiny tank. And he just covered that ground like without thinking about it. These horses are incredible.
And are the different horses for different altitudes or different terrains, or is it just depending on who you happen to line up with at the various ranches you're stopping at, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it depended on which rancher brought their group of horses, their herds, to that horse station. So the horse station is where we'd get a new horse. We switched horses every couple days to keep them fresh and not overwork them. Some of the horses were more fit than others. Some had a little bit of challenge to keep moving. I had one. I was a little concerned we'd be falling off the mountain into the river,
Oh
but
my.
luckily we kept going. So it was a variety. There were some Arabian mixes, and those were a lot more forward. I didn't get those, but I had a nice mix of horses.
So if you go to the bookstore, there's a whole shelf of books on preparing for a marathon or even maybe preparing for an ultra marathon. How do you prepare for a 500-kilometer horse race?
Yeah, so it was a lot of fitness training. I started early in 2023 and then got distracted with other things in life. A lot of mindset training, a lot of being present, and knowing that it's going to suck and it's going to be hard and it's going to be uncomfortable and that it will change. Like it's not always going to be that way. So, tips and tricks from mindset trainers that I've worked with, Tony Robbins, different things like life is always happening for me, not to me. And a lot of mindset. And then I did do a very focused training in the fall, ate a lot of protein and a lot of food. I actually tried to put on some weight for the race.
What are you actually, what is the day-to-day like? Are you dressed in, modern, lightweight clothing? Do you have to carry your own sleeping shelter and food and stuff like that? Or are there porters? How does that work?
Oh gosh. Yeah, so we have our own kit. We just get 22 pounds, which is our sleeping bag, sleeping pad. There were a number of items that they were required us to have because of the weather. Food, we had a camp stove, and a change of clothing. We did have resupply bags every few days that were had only a couple things in them. So the weather actually turned out to be warmer than most of us expected. We all brought mostly very cold weather gear. Luckily, it didn't. It only rained one day. Putting on, waking up, breaking down your camp, feeding and watering the horses, making sure they're all set, trying to eat a little bit, get a little bit of coffee in, brush your teeth, and tack up and ride off. Check your navigation. Look at your next point. Where are we going next? So, and getting a sense of the terrain and what might we run into, what challenges might we run into?
Yeah, it sounds like you're really roughing it. Are you doing your own navigation, or are you working with the race organizers? How does that work?
Yeah, so the navigation is a point to point from, so they give us a Garmin, and we have two pieces of equipment that they've loaned us for the race, an inReach tracker, so they are always tracking us. They know if we are about to go off a cliff or, in a place we're not supposed to, because there were some areas that certain ranchers, we needed to respect and stay out of. We're riding over livestock lands. There are
Oh, yeah.
thousands of sheep and cattle, so we had to be very cognizant of that.
For people who don't know, an inReach is this little, it's a tiny little box. It's a satellite communicator. There's an SOS button on the side if you run into trouble.
Yes. And luckily we didn't have to press that SOS, but we did call for help a couple times. So we'd choose our next point. Where do we have to get to next? So we had a set of vet checks and horse stations that led from the beginning to the end of the race. And we would put those coordinates in. The pink line would pop up on the Garmin, and we'd do our best to follow that pink line. However, it often went to places that we needed to navigate around. So that was a big challenge. So it was far more than 500 kilometers.
What is the landscape and terrain like that you're racing through?
Yeah, so it's varied. A lot of desert, high desert, rocky. It's parts of it were overgrazed, so it was rough. In the beginning, we were on dry lake beds, ancient lake beds with the Andes to our right, galloping through those. That was absolutely spectacular. A lot of river crossings. So that took, thought, where is the best place to go? Then these horses are amazing. And then very thick forests that you would consider to be impassable, but you just kept going.
Keep
And
going,
found a
yeah.
way through.
So ultimately you end up exiting the race before it ends. What happened? How did that come to be?
Unfortunately, yeah, it was day 9. So the last We figured we'd finish on day 10. We had about 80 kilometers to go. Spectacular day. I was on the best horse ever, and we were galloping towards Mount Fitzroy. If anybody's seen that, if you haven't, look it up. It's just a hard to describe mountain.
So is that the
And
one in the Patagonia logo, the clothing company logo? I think it might
you got
be.
it.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, just epic on every level, right?
Right.
I was riding with a wonderful group of women, and we were laughing and having fun. The terrain at that point was pretty nice. Some gullies that we had to jump out of, but that was fun. And it was warm, but it didn't think, you're in central Illinois, you know how hot it gets, and you're like, gosh, it's hot. So I wasn't really worried about the heat. And yet we rode into a vet check. Everything was fine. And then I sat down to have a snack, and I just sort of decompensated very quickly with heat exhaustion. It came out of
Oh,
nowhere. Did not see it coming.
yeah, that must have been so tough, so close to the end of the
Oh,
race.
it was awful.
Yeah. You sent us some audio. This is at the finish line. Let's take a listen to that. So you are competing, but this is such a singular experience. Talk about the camaraderie and some of the other riders you met on the journey.
Yeah, that was actually my partner and the other girls crossing the finish line. It's kind of emotional for me. The other riders were great. We all came in with a different goal. Some were very competitive, of course. It's a race, and they were there to win and do well. But this international group of riders who really at the end of the day cared for each other, and yeah, we had maybe a different mission. But we all knew how hard it was, and just really supportive and fun, lovely. It was amazing. It was like the best camp ever.
So we talked about that, the idea of the comfort crisis, and I think one of his rules is, make it something you could easily fail at, but don't die, right? So all this preparation, all this travel, the race itself, coming home, media attention now, what have you learned about yourself through this process?
Well, one of the biggest things is really to pace myself. And last year I did not. I overpaced, and I paid for it with some health challenges. And so really listening to my body, honoring that it knows, and also bringing that wisdom, I hope, to my clients. I work with folks who are seeking weight loss and improved health, and everybody wants things right away. And it doesn't happen that way. And so to learn from my own experience to guide my clients to being able to listen to their body and pace their own health journey, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've been able to take away from
What's your next planned discomfort? Will you
it.
return? Will you be taking on the Mongol Derby?
I don't think I'll do the Mongol. I'm going to volunteer for the Derby. I would do the Gaucho Derby again if somebody wants to sponsor me. So I'll put that out there.
Not a cheap adventure, I would imagine. Yeah.
No, it's not. But not sure horse-wise. I'm back to riding a little bit of the polo horses again here with the Weaver Farm in Peoria. And I'm really pushing myself in my music and getting out of my comfort zone with what I'm pursuing in the music part of my life.
Lori Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us and talking about your experience in the Gaucho Derby. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
Lori Kaplan recently competed in the 2024 Gaucho Derby, 500 kilometer, that's 310 miles, on horseback through the Patagonia region of Argentina. She's also a registered dietitian nutritionist based in Dunlap, Illinois. Coming up tomorrow on the program, in a first for the state of Illinois, there is now federally recognized tribal land here. It's been a long fight for members of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation after the land was sold out from under one of their ancestors in the year 1849. Plus, this is set to be an extraordinary year for cicadas. Various broods of the creature typically hatch on 17 or 13-year cycles, and this year, they happen to be aligning, meaning there are parts of Illinois that are going to get an extra buzz from these noisy insects. We'll talk about what is ahead with cicadas. And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can let us know what you thought about today's show by emailing talk@21stshow.org. And you can find that address and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. We've got our past conversations there, as well as links to subscribe to our podcasts. Or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Talk to you again tomorrow.